afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It'll come to order. We're going to open the public hearing on House Bill 5049. And we'll start with the College President, beginning with Betty Youngblood. Betty, Martin, yeah, you guys can just come on while Vivian Ball, Bull, I have my glasses on. And Jerry Berger. Good morning, Betty. Would you like to begin?
Good morning, Chair Minnis and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Betty Youngblood, president of Western Oregon University. Here today to talk with you about some of the financial aid challenges in the university system, and of course I will draw specifically upon Western for most of my examples. In 1997-98, 52% of the students in the university system received financial aid. Now that percentage of course varies quite significantly from institution to institution. Varies from a low of approximately 45% at PSU and the University of Oregon to a high of approximately 65% at Western Oregon University and OIT. At WOU, the percentage of students receiving financial aid has grown steadily from about 45% in 1992 to about 65% in 1997. We have a particular need for the state need grants for Oregon residents, and this is particularly critical at WOU because of the high percentage of students that we have from Oregon. Western Oregon University is generally the most Oregon of the schools in the state system. It is quite common for 93 to 95% of our students to be from Oregon, and almost 85% of those students remain in Oregon following graduation. So an investment in our students is truly an investment in Oregon. And we have a very high percentage of first-generation students from small towns and rural areas, students who often have very high need. In 1997-98, we had a unduplicated student population, students that would be enrolled and eligible for financial aid, of almost 5,000 during the year. Almost 800 of these students received a state need grant, that would be about 16%, for a total of almost $800,000. The state need grants have remained relatively constant over the past 5 years, but only a slight increase in the number of dollars received by each student has occurred. Loans, on the other hand, have increased steadily and are the principal source of aid to students at WOU. In 1997-98, 2,530 students borrowed $13 million, so that just a little over 2,500 students at WOU alone borrowed $13 million to attend the university. That's an average of approximately $5,000 per student. And of all of the aid put together, all kinds of aid at WOU, the state need grant was just a little more than 4%. And if you look at all of the aid together, the grants totaled about 31% and loans totaled a little over 68%. Nationally, loans stand at about 60% at this point, but back in 1980, loans were 40%. So one of the things that we have going on is a complete flip-flop of loans and grants in terms of the percentage in the financial aid mix. The state system in 1997-98 received $7.8 million in need grants. Again, that's almost $8 million. And those dollars went to approximately 8,000 students. And a very interesting comparison. WOU students, as I mentioned just a moment ago, borrowed more money. They borrowed $13 million in that same year. So the students at that university alone borrowed more money than the entire state system received in need grant dollars, again, that being $8 million. And that is only one campus. In terms of trends, we know that the costs are continuing to increase, and grant dollars generally are remaining constant. Our students are increasingly dependent upon loans. In the state system, it is quite common for students to graduate with loan debt of $20,000 or even more. At WOU, that debt tends to be about $15,000 per student. That is an average figure. This, of course, affects the ability of students to buy homes and cars and the kinds of things that are needed, and therefore affects their ability to quickly return dollars to the state and play a significant role in the state's economy. Our students often work, most of our students work, while attending college. And to put it in a nutshell, most of them work too much. Many of them work so much that their academics suffer. It's not uncommon for them to have not just one job, but two or three or four jobs. This increases the need to stop out, a reference that we use to students who will take an academic term off in order to save dollars to continue. That process disrupts the studies, prevents the students being involved in school activities, in athletics, in clubs, community outreach programs, student government, academic internships, and it requires students to take longer time to graduate. Access is more difficult because with the access issues, of course, the students are not there. So you don't see them, and that's much more difficult to assess. But we know that students are reluctant, people generally are reluctant to assume large amounts of loan debt. This is particularly critical at WOU because the students who are most reluctant to assume significant debt are first-generation students, students from low-income families, and students that are traditionally underrepresented in higher education. And we are told many times that students simply cannot continue, or they can't continue with the speed they would like to without some kind of scholarship or grant assistance. At Western Oregon University, it is clear that our students are borrowing the maximum, and that many times this is not enough. It's incredible how many times our students will come into the foundation office, for example, and be seeking amounts of money that may be as low as $25 or $50 simply to be able to buy enough food to make it to the end of the month. And then many times, you know, that's the same macaroni boxes over and over. And so this is a real problem. We also find that many families are now in college, and so it's not just a student, but with the job situation changing as it is, many times entire families are trying to return to college, and so the loan debt becomes quite enormous. Parents are often not able to help students pay off loans, and so sometimes we're seeing people simply delay going into higher ed or not being able to do so at all. Students who receive the state need grants are very needy students. They are among the most needy and simply do not have the resources to pursue higher ed without some significant support. At WOU, we are unable to award students a need grant after about the early part of the summer, simply because there are no such funds available. And this means that adults who might be laid off or might lose employment are not going to find these funds available. Their only sources of aid will be loans, sometimes Pell Grants, but loans will be the critical source. The current level of funding is very inadequate. Again, at WOU, about 4% of our aid is student need grant, 31% is grants, 68% is loans. And we certainly are pleased, the state system is pleased to recommend an increase in state need grant funding. This is a very, very critical need in the Oregon University system. I thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts with you this morning.
Thank you. Any questions?
that has met us and members of the Ways and Means Committee. I'm Vivian Bull, president of Linfield College in McMinnville, but we are also in other parts of the state. We have approximately 1,580 students on the McMinnville campus. In Portland, at the Linfield Good Samaritan School of Nursing, approximately 350 students. And we serve students at seven sites around the state, articulating the third and fourth year of an undergraduate education at our community colleges. So we serve multiple constituencies. Approximately 65% of all of our students are Oregon residents. I'm delighted to be here to share some concerns with you this morning, concerns which I am passionate about because they affect the lives and work of our students, who will be our leaders of the next century. There can be no greater investment in this state or any state or nation than to invest in our future leaders who are our students today. And a major concern in higher education, and you will hear this same theme from the public sector, from the community colleges, and from the private sector, is maintaining accessibility to all students who are prepared to undertake college work. More than a year ago, with the release of the two task force reports on higher education and the economy, and on access to higher education, Governor Kitzhaber asked the presidents of the Oregon independent colleges and universities to consider some ideas of how Oregon could assure broad access to high-quality post-secondary opportunities. There are a multitude of things that we're concerned about, broadening and enriching that post-secondary opportunity, ensuring educational sources and possibilities can be based on individual aspirations and abilities and not merely on personal financial considerations, ensuring that at least the full complement of Oregon's higher education resources are financially available to all students, increasing the number who complete their degrees on schedule and not having to take dropout times in order to replenish their financial coffers, reducing college debt upon graduation. The tendency today is that debt will foreclose the possibility of establishing households, dealing with a number of issues in the economy while they pay off debt, and still understanding that that has to be done. And improve postgraduate prospects for jobs, careers, and education. We are driven by a sense that the task of our institutions and of the state government is to serve students. They are our future, locally, regionally, nationally, and more obviously today than ever before, internationally. We're concerned that the state's NEED grant program be the program that continues to support those students who seek education within our state. We know that financial barriers are the most significant and prevalent impediment to college for a vast number of Oregonians. We know that Oregon's per capita commitment to need-based student aid is less than half of what other states average. At one time, Oregon's per capita commitment to need-based aid was above Washington's and was equivalent to that in California. That is no longer the case. In fiscal year 1998, Oregon's state student and grant funds per resident population were $4.93. This ranked us 31 among all states in the nation. California was at $8.98, Washington at $12.82, and the national average is $12.78. Oregon is $4.93. Likewise, in fiscal 1998, Oregon ranked 31st in the nation in state student aid as a percent of state support for higher education, at 2.9%. The national average in that year was 6.9%. California was at 4.5 and Washington at 6.4, both of those states increasing over the past year, whereas in this state we fell from 3.4% to 2.9%. Our students are struggling with too many hours of evening and weekend work to do justice to their studies, too much debt, and too many interruptions to their college careers. None of Oregon's colleges and universities, private or public, are well endowed by national standards. We are losing students to out-of-state colleges better equipped to provide aid and to non-college jobs. And this is a loss to Oregon not only in the present time, but in our future as well. Increased access to education is important for the well-being of our individuals. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics show that 1997 average family income for those with less than a high school education was $33,000 with an associated unemployment rate of 13.5%. With a high school diploma, the 1997 average family income was $46,500 with an associated unemployment rate of 6.4%. And with a bachelor's degree, the average was $81,000 with an unemployment rate of 3.1%. Almost 2.5 times that of a non-high school graduate and 1.7 times that of the high school graduate, and with a significantly lower unemployment rate. This is a good investment in the future. At Linfield College, we have significant financial needs. I will briefly give you some statistics to talk about the impact on a single class at Linfield. Institution total gift aid for 1998 was $5.2 million. Of that, $4 million was provided by the institution in both unfunded and funded aid. Our students received $469,000 from federal funds and $310,000 from state funds. The rest was made up from private sources. Total loan aid in that same period was $3.7 million. $5.2 million in total gift aid, an additional $3.7 million in total student aid. Now, the average aid package is $14,704. The average need per student is $16,118. We have a gap, and that has to be filled by student loans or parent loans. We have 641 students in 1998 who were from Oregon with needs. This represents, on the McMinnville campus alone, 40.6% of our enrollment, but it represents 58% of all students having needs. So our Oregon students are the neediest students within our student cohort. 14% of our families have incomes below $25,000. Our commitment is that 10% of each incoming class will be first-generation students. And very often those are students who no one else in their family has been to college. There's been little preparation in saving, the possibility of saving, and as with Western Oregon, those are frequently our high-need students. 18% of our students are eligible for state need grants. Support for students who are able and wish to complete their undergraduate degree is an excellent investment in the future of the community, the state, and of the nation. And in the private sector, the total commitment to support has risen from approximately 13% of our total educational expenditures in 1980 to 24% today. 24% of all of our expenditures go to aid to students. We must find ways to increase our support for the students who can complete their college work and ensure that all of our citizens have adequate and equal opportunities to choose among the state's complete complement of colleges and universities. We take heart also in a recent survey which revealed that support of this community of Oregon voters is for investing in students. Between April 8th and 14th, in a survey which was taken of 400 registered Oregon voters, they were asked whether the extra money for higher education should be given to state universities or directly to qualified students in the form of scholarships and grants to use at public or private colleges of their choice. 54% believe that the money should be given directly to the students. 31% to the universities should get the extra dollars. 4% said it should go to both, which would be a division of the pot, I suppose. 5% said neither, and 6% not sure. But 54% voted that that aid go directly to students rather than to the institutions per se. Adult students are a part of our component population as well, and they are ones who are frequently struggling when balancing jobs and family responsibilities and obligations, and yet they often are the most driven and committed students in our cohort population, and we need to be concerned about their place in the spectrum as well. There could be a number of possibilities, but providing aid directly to our Oregon students and allowing them to choose the type of educational institution that they find most appropriate for their interests and learning styles is extremely important. We support that more students will complete their undergraduate work, and probably more would be encouraged to go on to private, on to graduate work with public support. This state must reaffirm its concern for educating our citizens, must provide the most effective means of investment in the quality of the future of our citizens and our state, and must begin to recapture a position in support of our students that has been eroded under time. I urge you to give careful consideration to the aid opportunities which would enable our students to complete their work, which would empower them, those very citizens, to be more productive workers in our community and in our economy, and thus make this state a better place in which to live. I urge you to invest in our future by investing in our students. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Chairperson Minnis, members of the committee. I am Jerry Berger. I'm president of Semeca Community College. That's the official recognition. Some of you may think I'm the rose surrounded by thorns. Others of you might think I'm the thorn surrounded by roses. You can choose whichever one you want.
That seems obvious.
Very good. That's good.
Brief comments about Chemeketa. First of all, we serve Marion, Pope, Yamhill, and a little part of Linn County, who are a very large comprehensive community college. This year, we will serve over 50,000 students with an FTE of over 12,000. In 1997-98, Chemeketa had 885 students who received state need grants, about approximately $600,000. During that same year, 740 students took out loans for a total of about $525,000. At Chemeketa, we intentionally try to discourage people not to take loans. We're proud of the fact that we are the second lowest default rate in Oregon Community Colleges of loans, which is 6.6%. That's below the national average of over 10%. One of the reasons we can keep our loans for our students low is that these students, many of our students, are eligible for and do get the state need grants. Average age of community college students in Oregon is about 36. Most of them are independent, meaning they are on their own, they're responsible for their own lives, and they have no one else paying their way. Many of those students have childcare expenses. Students receiving state need grants are the neediest of the needy. In 1997-98, approximately 6,500 students in Oregon Community Colleges received $4.4 million in state need grants. Even with that, the need grant program is underfunded. Awards to eligible students cannot be made year-round because the funds are depleted. And with community college students, many of them miss the opportunity for state need grants because before they apply, the funds aren't there. As many of you may know, community college students enter not just in fall term, they enter all times during the year, so that does cause a problem.
No,
of 4,500 eligible but not funded students during 1997-98, 3,500 of those 4,500 were community college students. I really would encourage you to increase the funding in the Oregon State Scholarships Commission to allow all of the eligible needy students in Oregon to benefit from the state need grants. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel this morning?
I just want to make a comment. I think these people are right on in terms of the importance of the need grant. It's just, if we really want to have access and if we want to get kids who need a start, this is a program that ought to be funded and funded very well. I wonder from each of you, maybe you could give me some idea of what percentage of the students who qualify for the need grant who you can't give it to because you just don't have time or you run out of money to give it. And I get some understanding what happens at each institution, or do you know that?
I have my financial aid director in the back. I'm sure she can provide that information.
I think it would be interesting to know how many young people who would otherwise qualify just don't get it. And,
this is Kathy Campbell, financial aid director, Schenectady Community College.
Mm-hmm. We have a great Sunday school. The issue that comes up, and I think Dr. Berger said it very well, is that the way students enter into college is very different depending on the type of student they are and the segment that they choose. And so, in the state NEGRAN program, for many years, the community college students have the greatest number as a whole of those who end up not being able to go because they can't afford to do it. And they are more reluctant to take out loans. I mean, everybody takes out loans because they pretty much have to. But in our segment, you see, the people are older and they often have families of their own, and so they are very conscious about taking out loans and getting to borrow. And that's why, with our costs even being as low as they are, if they apply later in the year and they only get a Pell Grant and some supplemental grant, and I'll go into more of this when I get up here in a few minutes, it's a return to them, and they just aren't able to go. So I think a lot of what happens to those 3,500 students, of course, we don't have all those statistics because we've never fully funded the program. We don't have a whole year to look at to see which of those would stay in and not. But I can tell you from the ones that I meet every day, that makes a big difference.
Okay. We just don't have a number that we can give. No. Okay.
Yes. Representative
Ross? Madam Chair, I had a question for President Youngblood. We have, in this building, as you know, we have a lot of competing needs, most of which have a compelling case that is being made for that use for state funds. Just in your opinion, do you think that the tuition freeze or need grant, they're asking for about the same amount of money, $13 million for need grant and $15 million for the tuition freeze, which do you think is more important?
I think they're both equally important. They're both very important.
So if you had your choice, you'd give $7 million to each?
I would fund the meat grant much more fully, and I would provide the tuition fees.
Would you take that money out of K-12 funding?
I think it would come from, but that's the problem.
And I think that is exactly the problem that we're faced with, is that we have a finite amount of money. The tuition freeze is very important. You have made a compelling case for the need grant, and especially the students that were there and students who have met with me privately, the need grant is very important to access for them. So it is difficult.
Well, as you well know, the tuition freeze is significant, especially because of the tremendous increase in tuition. Over the last several years, tuition's gone up 90% in the last several years. And freeze, particularly for 2019, but also back in 1995, freeze was through the year after, and I haven't checked this in the last year or so, but Oregon has the highest public tuition of any state west of Michigan. And so, the need is very significant in order to tuition level. Students have a very high tuition level to need. But the financial aid is simply net.
Representative Minnis, I have the information here regarding the eligible applicants not awarded for lack of funds. In looking at the 97 to 99 biennium, and this is projected because we're still in process, Oregon public four-year institutions, there were approximately 16,000 recipients and 1,588 eligible applicants who were not awarded for lack of funds. The two-year colleges, there were 14,400 recipients, approximately 7,000 were not funded because of lack of funds. And in the independent colleges, there were 2,800 recipients, 220 were not funded. So approximately 33,000 students were funded, and 9,000 students were not funded.
Thank you. Those are very important. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Thank you to the Scholarship Commission.
Thank you. We have in front of us a document that describes private awards for 97-98. I think this is from the Oregon State Scholarship Commission. And I'm trying to relate the information that we have on this sheet describing private awards to the discussion that the three of you, the information that the three of you are presenting to us. Can you help me understand how the private awards relate to the...
Well, in our situation, it's the first time I've seen this, is that we have to take a look at it here.
And if each of you would define for me what a private award is in the case of your institution, that would help me also understand what we're talking about.
Okay. In case of our institution, the private awards come from a variety of sources that are non-governmental. Some of them come through high school grants from the Rotary Clubs and various other sources like that. So it's awards that are brought to the institution, not funded by the institution or state or federal government.
And so at Linfield in 97-98, should I include the School of Nursing?
Yes. Well, the data that I gave you was just for the McMinnville campus. In that, private funds and total gift aid were $426,000 versus state funds of $310,000 and federal funds of $469,000.
Are there different criteria applied to award the private grants as opposed to the need grant?
I think my understanding is correct. Private grants are not managed by the institution, but are brought by the student. Is that correct? Woody? Okay. Help.
If I may clarify 2 points. First, for the record, my name is Woody Farber, Executive Director of the State Scholarship Commission.
Thank you.
The sheets you have in front of you are the private awards that are administered by the State Scholarship Commission and would not include the private awards that might be administered directly by the institutions themselves. So that's why you're seeing a difference in numbers.
Okay.
And secondly, the private awards are, most of them are need-based as well as merit-based. So there are different criteria, whereas the need grant program is only need-based, the private awards can be merit-based also.
Okay. Thank you. I obviously didn't read the prompt correctly. So.
I do have another related question. Well, I want to give each of you an opportunity to respond to the information on the sheet if you want to do that before I ask the second question.
Okay.
I'm assuming that each of your institutions are actively engaged in adding diversity to your student body, and I would like to know how the availability of the NEED grant and also the private award impacts your ability to recruit students of color.
The availability of the NEED grant and I couldn't hear
the private award. Is the question clear? Do you need me to repeat?
Could you clarify that?
I'm trying to get a picture of how the availability of these grants and awards impact the availability or lack of availability impacts your ability to recruit students of color.
The impact is very, very significant because in many cases, students who have been traditionally underrepresented in higher education, often first-generation students as well, they often have very high needs. And so the lack of funds has a very significant impact. because it's very difficult for those students often to get the funds that they need, and in many cases, they are in the categories of some of the neediest students. And so inadequate funds has a very negative impact.
Though not always the case, many of our diverse students start at community colleges, and they start at different times of the year, and if all the monies are depleted and they apply out of sync, then they do not get aid. And as I mentioned in my testimony, of the 4,500 eligible students, 3,500 that didn't get awarded, didn't get aid, 3,500 of those were community college students. And I don't have the fact, but we do have a diverse student body at community colleges, so obviously not having access to those dollars would have impact on that population.
And the experience in the private sector would parallel that in the public sector as well. Frequently, students of great need are first-generation students, are students of color who are attempting to go on to higher education and face the same problems. So NEET grants are extremely important. They're also, of course, eligible for merit grants, which are managed within the institution itself. But this is a major concern in trying to develop and sustain a strong diversity within the student body.
And the need for many students, needy students especially, to work so many hours has a very negative impact upon their ability to access student support services and other kinds of things, making it that much more difficult for them to be successful. Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Kathy, are you going to go first?
Mm-hmm.
And then state your name for the record.
I will. Members of the Ways and Means Committee, for the record, my name is Kathy Campbell. I'm the financial aid director at Schumacher Community College. I've worked in financial aid in Oregon for 27 years and spoken to some of you on previous times I know about this issue. And I really appreciate your time this morning in discussing House Bill 5049. I want to just slip something in here as a result of the conversation that just occurred from our president, is that nationwide, private awards only make up 3% of the total amount of financial aid. I thought that might be helpful. So, we struggle with it, but it's just a tiny portion. I'd like to just take a few minutes and give you Financial Aid 101, okay? And that's a lesson, brief explanation of financial aid and who provides support to students. The federal government provides the largest share. Students apply on a free application, and eligible institutions, which we all belong to, we have written participation agreements with the U.S. Department of Education to participate in these programs. So, as you know, there's a lot of rules that go with that. And so we actually are the ones that award the financial aid to the eligible students and distribute the money to them. So that's sort of our role here. In addition, each college has funds available to award to students. Some of this comes from private or foundation funds, and some of it comes from tuition grants or loans, emergency loans, book loans, and various other internal programs that we each have. The types and amounts of institutional aid vary within each college. Now, the state of Oregon's share in this is the state NEED grant program. And that's the program that's funded in the Oregon State Scholarship Commission's budget, and those are the funds that we're speaking to you about today. On the federal level, as you've already heard many times, I'm sure, there has not been any appreciable increase in grants. The Pell Grant, which is the largest grant program, has been pretty steady, and for the 99-2000 academic year, the maximum Pell Grant will be $3,125 per year. most students get less than this amount. I pulled a couple of student files, typical student files at Shemeketa before I came, so I can share with you from the Financial Aid Administration perspective how financial aid piece works. The first student is a 39-year-old divorced male working on an Oregon transfer degree. That means he's coming to Shemeketa, he'll do his first two years, and then probably go to Western or Portland State or somewhere else to finish. He is what we call a total needs student, okay? The way the numbers work, he doesn't have any expected family contribution in the formula. His budget at Shemeketa for this year is $8,700 for 9 months. He has a $3,000 Pell Grant, a $936 State Need Grant, a $450 Supplemental Educational Opportunity Grant. He earns $22,250 in work study. His total aid is $6,636. So even with full aid in all the programs that we have available, he has an unmet need of $2,064. The second student is a single parent, age 27, with a two-year-old son. She is also a total needs student. Her budget for 9 months at Shemeketa is $11,200 because she pays child care while she's in school. She has the same financial aid package as the first student, total aid of $6,636. Her unmet need is $4,564. So even at a community college, and we have the lowest budgets of any of the segments, we are unable, with all the programs that we have, to fully fund a total needs student. Like the Pell Grant Awards, annual awards to students from the Oregon State Need Grant Program have remained fairly constant without an appreciable increase. As it is, we're unable to fund all the eligible students because the program is not fully funded to accommodate year-round applicants, and we've driven that home probably more than enough. But so with grant dollars remaining relatively constant, and post-secondary costs rising every year for tuition and living expenses and the other things that these people have to pay to go to school, there's a big gap for students, which they end up taking out in the form of loans. According to the Oregon State Scholarship Commission, the Oregon Community College debt burden is 70% higher than the national average. This is not a trend we want to concede, that we want to see continuing. So one way to stop the huge debt burden for students is to offer them more grant money. So I would like to encourage you, on behalf of all the needy students in Oregon, to increase the Oregon State Scholarship Commission budget by $13.2 million to allow for year-round funding and to increase slightly students' annual state need grant awards. Thank you for your time.
Any questions?
Sorry, I'm late, Madam Chair. Just have a question. You mentioned child care needs at Shemeketa. I was on Shemeketa's foundation. How many scholarships or child care scholarships does that foundation provide?
I knew somebody asked me something I didn't bring in my pocket today. Well, you know a lot about our foundation here, which is really nice, and they do have a significant amount of money that they do dedicate to child care. They have a child care grant. A student from that program typically, now I'm making some of this up, but I think I'm pretty close, gets $250 a quarter from that program. So they'll give maybe 50 or 70 students child care because they have far more applicants and the need is greater than what they can provide. That might actually pay 1 month of child care for that person out of the three.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
My name is Rita Lambert. I'm financial aid director at the University of Portland. I spent 15 years in financial aid at Lynn Benton Community College, and in 1986, I moved to the position of director at the University of Portland. So I've been in this, like Kathy, for some time. And there was a time when I first began working that schools were able to meet the needs of our students. When the Pell Grant first came in, the state grant was at 20% of our budget. A supplemental grant a little bit of work study, and maybe $500 from a Perkins loan, and the student was fully packaged. In the mid-80s, we began to see this slide. First, we were not able to meet maybe $100 or $200. The closer we got to the 90s, the greater those gaps became. And there were signs that all of us saw that we have talked about this morning. The cost of school rising faster than inflation. The grant increases not keeping up with inflation. In Oregon, we've seen from the time that I started in student aid until now, the state grant once covered 20% of the cost of education. Now it covers less than 11%. There were other signs. In 1993-94, 32% of the undergraduate students at the University of Portland came from families with incomes less than $35,000. Today, that's less than 14%. It's not that the economy has moved their incomes. The applicants are there. They simply cannot come. And much of what the other panel said about are not being highly endowed, are not being able to provide enough money, is part of the reason. And if they are able to come, we are increasingly seeing them as our dropout students, not because they want to be, not because they can't succeed academically. The loans are too great, and the gap is too big. In the early 90s, we were near a national crisis, and I think that because it was middle-income families, Congress recognized it and responded to it. But we have only recently begun to understand in this state what Congress's response to that crisis was. From 1987 to 1994, Congress increased the cumulative loan amounts that students could borrow more than 2.5 times. But there's even a more telling point. In one 12-month period, from January of 93 to January of 94, Congress doubled the amount that a student could borrow and then doubled it again, so that from December of 92 to January of 94, the loan amount that the poorest, neediest student could borrow went from $2,500 to $10,000. The way they did that piece of that was if parents were denied a PLUS loan because of poor credit, lowest families, difficult to keep credit, but if they were denied a PLUS loan, the student could borrow. And we began to see our debts spiraling. We are just now, last year and this year, graduating the classes that were the first of these that were able to borrow at these new amounts. When I look at the students who don't make it, and when I look at the students who drop out because we meet with them, I see students who tell me that they have to go work because they need to help pay the parent loans that their parents have borrowed. I have students who hope that they will be able to get back into a state school. Many of them are coming from families with $10,000 and $20,000 incomes. And I am not lying to you. The amount of parent loan that the parent has borrowed is more than double the annual income of the parent. These programs are unconscionable. They do not do a debt-to-income ratio. If your credit's good, you can borrow. And the families have done that. When I look at my graduates, when I first came, the loan amounts were 6 and 7 in terms of average loan amounts for students. This year, the average amount at my school for our graduating seniors is $17,600 and some dollars. At some of my colleagues' schools, those amounts reach $20,000 and $22,000. Of that group of graduating seniors, 1/5 of those who have borrowed have cumulative debt ranging from $25,000 to $50,000. That means for a $25,000 loan, the student has a $300 monthly loan payment for 10 years at a minimum before they've even perhaps gotten their first job. When I look at my students, I also know that these loan amounts
are causing them to postpone some of the things they want to do. I have an education major that's in this group of 25 and above. She wants to volunteer for a year. She's afraid she can't do that because of the loan amounts that she has. I have a finance major who's in this group. He wants, a foreign language major. He wants to pursue a master's and a PhD. He can't afford to do it. In my senior class, the class coming up this year, I have a young man whose both parents are deceased. He's a biology major. He's an outstanding researcher. He has published papers. He has gone to conferences. He will graduate with more than $40,000 in debt before he begins the pursuit of his medical degree. These people are my students, and they are Oregon's students. They are the people from our state who are trying to get through our schools. I have a young student, a family, who has never had anybody from the family go to college before. She wants to start at my school this year. And we spent more than an hour talking about why that's probably not a good idea. I mean, I get my salary is to try to bring them, but you know, when the parents are facing $40,000 in parent loans to make this happen, I feel I have a responsibility to try to help them understand there are other alternatives, maybe for the first 2 years, and then maybe transferring. In my mind, these things really tie together. The rising costs, the grants, like the state need grants, that have diminished in purchasing power, the increased loan amounts that force our students into huge debts and cause them to postpone their futures. If we are, and I think we are as a state, kind of moving heaven and earth to try to find money for primary and post-secondary, I hope we don't overlook this student. If we could begin to get the loan amounts back to 20% of cost, it would take $10,000 off the average loan amount for my neediest students at graduation. That's what it would do. It would be a significant help. So I'm hoping that we can do that. I thank you.
Any questions?
Good morning. I'm Keith McCright from Oregon State University. Most recently, I have served as Director of Financial Aid. I officially retired end of February, but I am continuing on a part-time basis for some transition for our office. I would like to first indicate that I think of all the panels, the previous one and this one, I support what they have indicated. I think one of the most critical things we can do as a society is do everything possible to attempt to guarantee access to the benefits of post-secondary education. And I think we could expand that in terms of the importance of education, not just K through 12, but post-secondary. And I think the investment, and we hear this a lot, I've seen this a lot in the newspaper, I think the investments that we make in education will pay for itself. And earlier you heard about the differences in income. I think it's been demonstrated as early as the GI Bill after World War II, that increased income tax question because of the change in the level of income that education provided paid for the GI Bill investment several times over. So, have passed out a sheet that shows a spreadsheet as I was preparing for this panel yesterday. I was interested in seeing exactly what had taken place over time. I backed up 5 years. And so I picked out some data points, and where you see the tuition, again, this is all Oregon State University, but I think it's reflective by and large of the state system in terms of what's taken place between 92, 93, and 97, 98. I should point out that the tuition surcharge, the big jump, happened prior to this 92-93. But where you see that over this period of time, the tuition and fees, and this is resident undergraduate student for the academic year, increased 16%. Our overall student budget as it relates to packaging student aid, and that includes books and supplies, room and board, miscellaneous personal transportation, increased 78%. In other words, the tuition, once it had the big bumps, there was some freeze put in place on some of those years, but the fees, because there's not general fund coming into those, continue to increase. When you look at the major grants, the Oregon Knee Grant for OSU students, in that period of time between 92-93 and 97-98, had a 34% increase, but the federal Pell Grant had 11% decrease, and FCOG just a slight increase, but overall the grants went down 1%. You compare that to the loans, in total loans, we went from 20 million plus to 41 million, 105% increase. So you can see when we talk about the imbalance, what has taken place just in the 5-year period. And that's where I think all of us in financial aid have been for a period of time and continue to be concerned about the imbalance in terms of availability of grants as compared to loans.
Madam Chair.
Andy Gordon.
Thank you very much. In the case of your institution, I note that in the category of private awards, and again, I'm looking at the sheet from the Scholarship
right.
Commission, in 97-98, you awarded $574,496. Is that amount an increase or decrease over the years, contrasted with the other financial aid information you shared?
It has been an increase, and for one, and I think largely because of one particular program, the Ford Family Scholarship Program, Kenneth Ford, and I think there's been newspaper articles on that. That has just come into play in the last few years. It's been a very significant increase. But again, let me put it in perspective that in terms of student aid, nationally at public institutions, 90% of the student aid is federal. And that primary federal grant is the Pell Grant. At OSU, it's 89%. So that means other programs constitute right in the range of 11%. They're all very important, but when you look at the magnitude of the amount, it is a smaller amount. The scholarships, private awards, whether they're administered by state scholarship commission or institutional, or coming from the local PTA or Rotary, are when you look at the cost, they are a smaller factor.
Keith and members of the panel, thank you very much. I certainly agree with what you have said and what the previous members did say. Also, Keith, this would probably be for you, since you're from the panel, the only one from a public institution, higher ed. Have you seen any opportunities come to making Oregon State University more efficient in delivering the product? The reason I ask this, you spent considerable time in your previous session on the Higher Ed Efficiency Act, and we realized some savings, but I'm not sure if any of those savings were reflected in the way you can operate, the way OSU can operate, for instance, in terms of delivering a higher quality, a better product
to your customers, the students?
You're talking financial aid delivery specifically as compared to all of Oregon State University.
No, I would say also the way you're organized, you know, your teaching staff and all of that.
Well, let me comment only on financial aid.
Sure.
And really, I think that would probably be the only area I could. I've been in financial aid this completing my 29th year, and I've seen dramatic changes from going into an office that had one electric typewriter, no electronics. And that would be the same if you went into probably only almost any office in 1970, to the point that we've gained a great deal of efficiencies over time, and this includes the overall delivery. We pulled down the applicant information, as mentioned earlier by Kathy. We were talking about the federal application, the need base that drives the system in determining eligibility. We pull that information down electronically. The feds are moving to, and currently a student family can apply online, these kinds of things. So the most dramatic change I've seen has been in the automation area. And we also receive information from the State Scholarship Commission. They draw their information electronically from the same source. And so that piece of it, I think, is moving along. There's some bells and whistles and that kind of thing. Now, Measure 5, because of budget cuts, and I think all state universities dealt with this, but it was particularly on the front end, heavier on the administrative and the support areas. We lost 25% of our staff. I still say we're understaffed in terms of increasing responsibility, workload, percentage of students, that kind of thing. But the only way I really see that we can deal with it is more efficiency. Organization-wise, each school, based upon the federal requirements, has to have a financial aid staff. You can't put it all in one place, and I don't think that probably would deliver any more efficiently. But I think we will gain efficiency as we move with electronics, and that will probably be the key. There's lots of things that need to be done in terms of early awareness and information. Our State Association of Student Financial Aid has been working in those areas, but it's almost like an unlimited area in terms of what we could be doing. And it's all limited on time.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, this is not a question. It's really more of an editorial statement that I just feel compelled to make, because the problem that we're dealing with here in Oregon, it's a national problem, and one of the panelists referenced that. Until we have a shift away from a national policy that prioritizes military spending over spending on education and spending on some of our other domestic needs, we're going to be continually grappling with this problem at the state level. And I think of the recent action on the part of the Congress, and I did say this is an editorial comment, which gave the president twice as much as he requested to fight the current war. What if those dollars had been directed toward education? A part of our responsibility, I believe, is to fight this battle at the national level, convincing our congressional members that the policy choices have got to change. There needs to be a redirection of how our nation's resources are spent, and that's at the crux of the problem, as I see it.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you very much.
Carlos and Mr. Weisman. Look at my face in the
We'd like to have Mr. Major start start off the session today to complete his comments and some of the recommendations.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, for the record, I'm Dave Fazer from the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division, and I just have a couple of minutes of completing comments on the handout entitled Oregon State Scholarship Commission Governor's Recommended Budget. We were going to finish up the last page. There was a question from Senator Gordley regarding Package 205. I'd like to clarify an answer that was given yesterday. The question, as directed, was, are there any other program initiatives involved in Package 205? To paraphrase, Senator, excuse me. What we have included in Package 205 is detailed in your budget document for the Scholarship Commission on page 148.
Is that 148?
Yes, page 148 of the Scholarship Commission budget. Page 148 is the fiscal impact summary for Package 205. On the reverse side of that page will be the narrative description of the package. And on page 148, you see that there is not only personal services, but there is also associated services and supplies that we have budgeted for that position. Very rarely do we allow strictly just personal services to be budgeted because there are services and supplies generally associated with expenditures associated with what that person intends to do, where that person sits, the kind of equipment that person needs to do their job. The estimates for services and supplies are $18,894 of the total package amount of $97,408. I hope that answers your question, Senator Gordley.
It does answer my question about package 205. Now, could you also clarify package 101 and how that $100,000
Yes, I can. And again, in the budget document on page 101, package 101 does include personal services for a principal executive manager fee of $93,012. In addition, there is expendable property and publicity and publications associated with that position in the amount of $6,988 for a total of $100,000 for the package.
Madam Chair, that answers my questions on those two packages.
Okay. Any other questions, Representative Winning?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the package 301, the default loan, could you explain it? Some other funds? What are those other funds, and is the activity to recover the federal loans that are outstanding? Can you clarify that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winters, I'd like to defer to the Scholarship Commission to answer the specifics of the program associated with packages.
Okay. Chair Minister, Representative Winters, if I may, Package 301 is a default loan reduction initiative. And the focus of that initiative is to prevent students from going into default.
Okay.
So the whole focus is to catch students early in their delinquency and to spend additional sums and put additional programs in place so we help those students through their delinquency and keep them from defaulting on their loan, thereby ruining their credit rating forever.
Question. Where are the dollars from coming from?
The dollars are coming from other funds. Strictly, and those other funds being interest earned on the reserves that we're holding in the reserve fund for the program, for the loan program.
I guess I need to know where the reserve came from.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair.
Senator Carlos.
For Mr. Fazer. As Dennis looked at...
I'm sorry, Senator Carlos, he hadn't quite finished the answer, and I'm sorry, I didn't let him finish.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Representative Winters, the reserve fund is a fund that's established out of monies we receive for each loan that's guaranteed, and that money sets up a reserve for a potential default of that loan in the future.
And you get a percentage of the dollars of the federal dollars when they come to the grant, and you put in reserve.
Is that correct? Representative Gross, that's not exactly correct. We get a percentage of the loans that are made, has nothing, no connection with the grant side of it at all.
Thank you. Representative Winters, is that?
Yes.
I'm just wondering, on packages 101 and 102, the public information, public outreach, we're buying some additional individuals, people, staff, for those packages, positions, and I was wondering whether or not it wouldn't be maybe just beneficial to put that money into student grants, or student aid grant, or something like that. Is there some problem with doing that? I mean, the need for the staffing is very important, or is the money not available for the need grant, or how does that work?
Mm-hmm. Representative Ross, Senator Trill, I'll answer briefly, and again, I'd like to defer to the Scholarship Commission, but the governor's recommended budget includes packages such as this that help provide the resources to disseminate information, market the available financial aid, and also provide materials and face-to-face contact to increase the use of the existing financial aid.
It's the governor's assessment or DASA's assessment that the 89 employees now couldn't be readjusted to do that function and then have more money for grants out of this.
Representative Ross, Senator Trow, there are and it continues to be conversations within Scholarship Commission looking at reorganization of existing resources. At this point, we did not believe they have the FTE that they could reasonably transfer to that function at this time.
How have they been handling public information coordination up to this point?
Senator Trow, if I could defer to the Scholarship Commission for that answer. Representative Ross, Senator Crow. Two additional points I'd like to make on what Mr. Frazier was saying. First, the two positions you're talking about are funded out of the loan division dollars, and the monies, if the monies were not used in that area, they would not be able to be used for grants. And to put into the grant program.
I thought there might be some complication.
So that's one complication. The second complication is we have identified part of our responsibility as a full-service agency is to inform students and their families what sources of aid are available so that we can help begin to address the over-borrowing that you've heard about from all the panelists thus far. And so that's what this outreach is for. We're using it as an educational program.
You haven't been doing that before. You have no staff doing that.
We have one staff doing that. We have another staff doing it on a part-time basis in the grant program. So we have been insufficient in the staff we have allocated to it in the past. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The whole issue, going back to Package 103 and regarding defaulting, I guess to me what raises the question in my mind is you could set up this person to help counsel, I guess, or screen potential or process folks who are borrowing money. But the reality is, is there any enforcement? I mean, can you really, in the end, you're going to the forces that drive folks to default are sort of out of your hands. I mean, it's whether they can get a job. There's a lot of personal decisions people are going to make that you can't necessarily influence. So I guess to me, I guess the rationale for this is, I guess I'm sort of wondering, what will this person really be able to do?
Chairman, Representative Edwards, if the references to Package 301, the 12 Reduction Initiative,
right.
That package is for programs that we can use to ensure students who have borrowed understand all the options available to them in correcting their delinquency that they have on their loan. So it's a whole series of processes, if you will, of informing students as to what's available to them
and instead of having to pay maybe $250 a month to repay their loan, they might be able to begin by paying $150 a month and then escalate that payment up over time. So it's an educational process for them, and it's money, the earnings that I talked about that we're using for this program off the reserve fund are monies earmarked by Congress to be used just for such a default reduction initiative. So that's really the only purpose we can use those monies for.
But my question, I guess the thrust of my question is, you can have a workout plan. I mean, it often comes down to basic priorities in one's budget. If somebody's, and we heard testimony from young women who are mothers, there's some basic needs in life that they're going to meet first before they look at a college loan, and often that's what bumps these people into default. And I'm just saying, I don't know, we could throw more money at trying to help your program, but I guess my concern is, skepticism is, in the end, how do you enforce this? I mean, you really can't. I mean, I guess people default for a variety of reasons. They may have gotten a lot of credit cards in the mail and leverage themselves up. They can't pay those off either. So it seems to me, I'm not sure, I'm just skeptical about what it is that this will really be able to do unless you've got some sort of enforcement mechanism, which I don't know if it exists.
Representative Edwards, you're on target in that it's a personal choice as to whether they want to pay the loans back or not. But it's our responsibility to give the borrower every option and every opportunity to pay that loan back and convince them that the result of not paying that back is going to be more harmful than it's worth, i.e., as I mentioned earlier, the impact on the credit rating, the fact that it's going to cost them more money if they default on that loan and we have to buy it as a default to student loan. So while I agree with you, it's a personal choice, it's our responsibility to give them all of the options available to them for that to happen, including, if necessary, if their finances are so low or if they're unemployed. We have unemployment deferments. We have forbearances. So we can help work through the process with them to get them over the, if you will, cash flow problem that they're having currently. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Jeff Sweetser to add to that answer, if I may.
For the record, my name is Jeff Sweetser, and I'm the Deputy Director. Madam Chair and Representative Edwards and members of the committee, the focus of this package is preventative in nature. What we would be using with these with this funding is to go out and work with our schools and students to educate them about the importance of borrowing to finance their education, but also to borrow responsibly. And so we back up in process and start much earlier in educating students about borrowing instead of waiting till they get to the point where they're at ready to default. The goal here is to educate them about the value of an education, but also being prudent in borrowing and matching it up with the economic opportunities of your education as well. So trying to educate much earlier in the process.
I'm sure.
I have just a follow-up on the loan. What percentage of the loan goes into the reserve fund or goes into the administrative piece that then creates the reserve fund?
Chair, Minister, Representative Winters, that is currently at 1% of the initial loan amount, and then any undefaulted loans, the put 24% of the new loans that are made of what we collect on defaulted loans into that fund also.
So a percentage of these dollars are dollars that the student has already encumbered a debt from in the first place.
Chair, Minister, Representative Lynch, that's correct.
Had you given any thought to perhaps, if you know, from an education standpoint, or that the financial aid officer, those who are working with the students at the front end would participate in some of the educational information that you want to impart?
Chair and Minister Representative Williams, we work very closely with the financial aid offices to work with them to develop programs to keep borrowing as low as we possibly can. And that's what President Berger was referring to this morning at Chemeketa Community College.
I guess my concern is that we do need more dollars for students, and a percentage of their dollars are going into administration and now setting up a quote default program, which is coming out of their money that they borrowed.
Representative Winters, Chairman, Representative Winters, the 1% that was being put into the reserve fund as a reserve for future default has recently been reduced to 0% for the next year for new borrowing, since we have a reserve fund at the level we need to meet the, as far as we can see into the future, the requirements of that reserve fund. So we have, our estimate is over in 1999-00 by academic year, we will save students borrowing through our programs about $1 million.
So currently we are at zero.
Currently we're at zero because that reserve fund is large enough to give us comfort that we have adequacy in it.
What's the total amount in the reserve fund?
Total amount in reserve fund? It's about $14 million in the reserve fund now, and a large portion of that is restricted.
What percentage is restricted?
A large portion of it. I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, Representative Winters.
Senator Hartson?
Yes, thank you. I'm looking at packages 101, 102, and 301, $674,000. I think you've done a good job. At least I understand that there's a lot of pent-up demand out there for your product. I need you to tell me why this legislature can't, you know, change these complexities that you just told Senator Tro makes it impossible to utilize those funds in direct aid.
Chair, Senator Hartung, if I may, the program that we are responsible for administering, the Federal Family Education Loan Program, is a federal program that we administer at the state level. All of the funding for that program is contained, is self-contained within the program. So we do not pay grant costs out of that program. We do not pay administrative costs for grants out of that program. It's contained in support of the loan program. So that's where the complexity comes in, the fact that we're administering a federal program.
So it would take a change in the federal law.
That's how I come out of that.
Okay. Well, Senators Wyden and Smith have made it very clear that they're anxious to, you know, send money to improve education directly without a lot of strings attached. So I'll follow through on that.
Senator Gordon?
Thank you. I'd like to go back to Package 101 again. I still have some remaining questions. I'm looking at budget page 99 in the white notebook. And there are $49,999 of general funds in this package. Is that correct?
Chairman, Senator Gordley, that was the original agency request, and in finalizing the governor's recommended budget, we negotiated adequate amount of other funds within the agency to use for this entire package. The governor's recommended amount just below that shows general fund zero and other funds $100,000.
Okay, so it's all other funds. Looking at the description of how this particular program will be carried out, I'm looking at the section now that's titled How Accomplished. The staff person would coordinate agency responses to financial aid issues in the news, assist staff of operational divisions in development of public information in a variety of media, coordinate development of information campaigns, et cetera. My question is twofold.
how were those activities taken care of before this request? And if this request were not met, then how would those activities be handled?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordon, what has happened over time is that as our programs have grown and as our focus has shifted to not just delivering dollars, but delivering information about student financial aid, we've done this piecemeal. And to give you an example, we have our grants division staff works on developing the Oregon Public Broadcast annual presentation in conjunction with the Oregon Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators. That's a big piece of work that we did not have a number of years ago. We now have that responsibility. So what's happened is we've built up a workload in those areas and taken our managers away from them managing and put them in a position of functioning as ad hoc public information officers. So by adding this position and the outreach positions, it allows us to focus on our message so that it's more clear and crisp and more productive.
And then the second part of the question was if the position went away, then what?
We would, Madam Chair.
The plan B is what I'm asking.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, we would survive for lack of a better plan. We are doing the work now. It just diminishes our managers' abilities to focus on their managing their programs. And they're currently doing it, and this package is seeking some relief for them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just from the material that we have, it indicates that the money in Package 301 is going to be used for upfront education, helping students make good decisions about the balance between what they borrow, what they get in grants, whether they take a semester off and work to keep their debt within reasonable limits. That's my understanding. Is any of this money in any way being spent to serve students who are actually in the default process? In other words, are we doing anything to assist students who are about to default or two or three payments behind in figuring out what their options are and how they can meet their obligations, what flexibility they have, or the importance of meeting that obligation? Or is this all up front before the loan kind of education?
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative Ross, this money would be preventative in nature, as I was indicating earlier, much earlier in the stream of borrowing. We currently have a default prevention staff in our organization who works with lenders who have communicated to us that borrowers are about ready to default. And the responsibilities of this area is to work, contact the borrower, locate them if the lender's not been successful, and to work with the borrowers in identifying if there are extenuating circumstances that they might qualify for a deferment or a forbearance, and also to educate the borrower about the importance of paying their bills and act as a bridge between the lender and the student to prevent defaults. And I might add that the success of that unit is quite remarkable. We have about a 91% aversion rate. We're able to work with borrowers and have about 91% of those avoid going into default.
Just to follow up, what did you say that our default rate was in Oregon? You did tell me that.
I haven't told you that yet, but we can.
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, the cohort default rate in Oregon, which is the rate used to measure on a national level, is 8.4% for the last reporting period the Department of Education has put out, compared to a national average
of 9.4%.
Have we improved that default rate over the past 4 years? Has our default rate gone down?
Yes, it has, and I have that information here.
But it is going down.
Yes, it has.
Okay. And do you feel that your default prevention staff are adequate to meet the needs of your lenders? Is that saying you have commercial lenders who you work with on that? Do you feel like that area of your operation is adequately staffed?
Madam Chair and Representative Ross, yes. We have no option packages for additional staff in that area.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up, I'm still on 301 too because I'm having a tough time in my mind piecing together the program that you're talking about implementing and the upfront consultation with the borrower. And I look at your detailed schedule and over almost $250,000 is a publicity and advertising. I'm trying to relate in publications relating that with the student and the counseling, so I need some help on the tax.
Madam Chair and Representative Winters, publicity and publications is a broad term that encompasses the production of written materials and mailings to prospective borrowers. We envision that there would be some work with preferably OPB as far as the public services announcements about responsible borrowing and the ability to just get the word out about being prudent borrowers if you're going to pursue a post-secondary education.
So really, it's a media campaign.
There is a part of that in this.
Are you finished?
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the largest and most vital employers in my area is an organization that chases down default on student loans. So I want you to do too good of a job with that. But in seriousness, I'm wondering, at what stage of the game are these loans declared in default and actually go to a firm such as this one that is involved in the collecting?
Madam Chair and Representative Wilson, recently the federal laws changed. It was 180 days past due. It is now 270 days past due.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? I think this is a good time to pause. The Senate needs to go on. Did you want to make a closing comment?
Just one comment from that committee, Madam Chair. In response to Representative Winters, we will obtain the percent of restricted funds for you in that reserve.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. We're going to close the public hearing.
Yeah.
House Bill number
5049
and we are adjourned.
Thank you.